Thank you for joining us for the Making After School Cool podcast, the link between research, theory, and practice for those who are interested in the activities youth participate in during non-school hours. The Making After School Cool podcast is produced by Case for Kids, a division of Harris County Department of Education, and I'm your host, Michael Wilson. Today's podcast features an interview I had with Chad Chessmark. Chad Chessmark was recently our guest speaker for our Lights On After School celebration, and he spoke on how the power of the brain can interpret the future that students as well as adults may have. I hope you enjoy this edition of the Making After School Cool podcast. Welcome back to the Making After School Cool podcast. And I have with me Chad Chessmark, who just finished the presentation in part of our Lights On After School celebration. And it's really one of those presentations that it was awesome, for one thing. You did an awesome job, but it's also kind of hard to explain. Yeah. So I'll let you do a little bit more explanation on what exactly it is you do. But before we get to that, I want just a little background information on how did you get to this point?
Well, I've been performing as a magician my entire life. So I started performing, honestly, at 6 years old and worked my way up the magic ranks, used to compete in magic competitions. And then I got into mind reading and I wanted to explore that thoroughly. So I started studying hypnosis and NLP or neuro-linguistic programming. So you could really get into somebody's subconscious mind. And that then I became fascinated with that so much that I wrote a whole book about it. So I like to combine the two in my presentations.
Okay. And for us, because we do work with kids, a couple of things I want to ask you. First, you said you started at a very young age with magic.
Yes.
What kind of lit that spark that said, hey, this is something I'm really interested in and I want to see how far I can go? Can you remember?
I can remember. I had seen Doug Henning, who was the big magician before David Copperfield. So he had TV specials, but I got to go see him live when I was like 6 years old, and I was just blown away, not knowing that I could actually ever do something like that. And then went to Disneyland and got, or Disney World in Florida, and got a Mickey Mouse magic set while we were there. Mm-hmm. And on the flight home, I didn't get to sit with my parents. I had to sit next to an elderly woman who was, you know, very kind and saw me working on these little silly tricks and asked me to show her one. And when I showed her a trick, she politely said, "That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life." And that stuck in my head. And I knew at that moment that I'm never going to stop doing this.
Right.
And I haven't.
Yeah. And that's really neat, because I think sometimes the reactions that we have, especially at a young age, can influence the direction we go to in such a great way.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I talk in the presentation, that they won't hear necessarily, but I talk a lot about how to get an idea into your subconscious mind. Well, when you're younger, the thing that separates your conscious mind and your subconscious mind is less developed. So that's why kids are so easy to influence, mm-hmm. in a positive direction or a negative direction. So the interactions that you have with children when they're young has a massive impact on who they become when they grow up.
And I think that's a key point for educators, parents, anybody who's working with kids, how we respond to what it is that they're doing, be it negative or positive, will go a long way. And I know there's always seems to be a trend. Like if you ask a young kid what they want to be when they grow up, you know, they'll have this laundry list of things that they want to be.
Yeah.
And usually it's stuff that they see: fireman, policeman, actor, professional athlete, so on and so on. But then as they get older, it seems like that list starts to shrink more and more. And simultaneously, when they're younger, the feedback we give them tend to be a little bit more optimistic. And then as they get older, maybe not so much. Can you speak on a little bit on that trend, on why do you think that when kids are young, they have all these possibilities, and then for just, I guess, life circumstances or so on, as they get older, they tend to dwindle those possibilities. And what can we as after-school practitioners do to encourage that belief that they can accomplish what it is that they set out to do?
I think that, when kids are really young, they're told you can be anything you want to be
right.
when you grow up. So they start fantasizing or imagining themselves doing all kinds of things. But as they get older, then they're start to told, well, okay, you're not actually very good at basketball. You're not going to be a professional.
Right.
You know, and that can shut them down and say, you know, and shut that goal off. When you never know, that kid could have grown up to be great. You're not tall enough. Well, neither was Spud Webb.
Right.
So, yeah, by having, as they get older, people start putting up boundaries for them. They put up, it's not boundaries that the kids put up themselves. It's people put them up for them, around them, saying, yeah, you need to stay in this direction. You know, don't go after that. That's never going to happen. Only a few percent of people ever make it
right.
to be the president of the United States or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's not you. When if they're encouraged that, you know, that could be you, maybe that's the kid who's going to go for that and
right,
reach it.
Right. One of the things you touched on your presentation was imagining a wall between your conscious and subconscious brain.
Yeah.
And how that at times we can plant ideas and thoughts in the subconscious brain that eventually we can manifest that into reality.
Yes.
In out of school time, we do try to introduce students to things that many of them otherwise probably wouldn't even know about.
Yeah.
We either bring in some service providers, we train our staff. Tonight we have an event at the Hobby Center where they're going to go downtown, go to one of Houston's best theaters, and actually see a performance. So we do want to kind of like plant that seed that, hey, these are all parts of life that you can actually accomplish if it's something that you like. You also touched on trying a variety of things. In fact, I'd actually want you to go into a little bit more detail on to discover things that you like or you don't like, and
right.
how important it is to not be afraid to explore a variety of stuff. Can you go a little bit further on that?
Yeah, and what you just said made me think of something. Discovering things that you don't like is equally as important as finding something that you do like, because you know that you don't want to do that. Because you know, people say, well, why don't you become a doctor when you grow up? Well, if you don't ever look into medicine at all, you know, maybe you start looking into it and find it fascinates you. But maybe
right.
you find it's not for me,
mm-hmm.
and you know now you can move on to the next thing. You know, eventually you're going to find your thing, you know, what you're passionate about. Some people it takes a really long time, though. I mean, I've had friends who most of their life they're searching and they're searching, but then when they find it, they know they found it.
Right, right. And there's also no timetable. I think sometimes we preset timetables on ourselves that
right.
if I don't accomplish this by this time, or if I don't discover what it is that I'm going to do by this age, then we just tend to settle with what's there.
Yeah.
I think what's kind of neat about your presentation is it definitely is outside of the box. So
that's true. Yeah.
I can say that. But the other part is you do create a stage where things that seem not possible, it actually is possible.
Right.
And I think with adults sometimes that's more amazing than kids who sometimes are, like you said, open to a variety of things. As you push your presentations and as you kind of think about what can you do that would really, like, for lack of a better word, amaze people, how do you come up with those ideas?
Well, it's interesting because it's almost like where I talk about setting goals, where you can start somewhere and then just live your life and then at the end see where you ended up, or you can start and say, here's where I want to end up, and then how do I get there, and work backwards, create
mm-hmm.
the plan. So that's how I do it in my show. I mean, the finale with the numbers and the letters, that whole thing is insane. To figure out how to do that going forward would be impossible.
Right.
So I had to figure out, how do I want to end this show? And then I had to go backwards. How do I get all this randomness to equal this?
Yeah.
So it's working. It's begin with the end in mind, like the seven habits of highly effective people.
Right, and I think with people who are working with kids of all ages, I guess we could say, that's something that schools touch on it, but I don't think they divulge in it as much. I mean, they have their lesson plans, they have their curriculums, and in one sense or another, we have this, by this age, you should be in this grade, you should be able to accomplish this, and so on. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes subconsciously, we do plant that seed that, you know, if I'm not at this point, at this time, then I'm not going to be either good in this particular subject or whatever.
Right.
What do you think are ways that we can maybe counteract that?
Well, I guess just let them know that it's going to be different for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's going to take their own path to get to where they end up. And even though there's going to be guidelines, there kind of has to be some structure to it. You know, don't be afraid to break that structure.
Right.
From, you know, if you're dealing with a particular student and you see this person has potential to do something better in a different way, you know, if you can help them do that, do it.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that, like, I know, I guess we will call it magic or we will call it illusions in terms of your presentation.
Yeah.
But I also know there's a lot of self-development that's involved in it.
Well, everything I do, none of what I do is magic, real magic. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of magic as in sleight of hand, misdirection, showmanship, timing, and influence, which is all, those are all things of the mind, to create the illusion of magic.
And what would you describe, like, how would you describe just what exactly it is that you do? I mean, I have some colleagues that were, you know, sitting there with me, and every time you would do something, there would be like the first, which was funny, they saw it. They saw what you were accomplishing.
Yeah.
But their first initial reaction is no. It's like, no way, you know, no, you know, it was like, there's no way. But then you see it, so you know there is a way.
Yeah.
Is that kind of like the goal that you're setting forth, or is that the power of illusion, or the power of, I'm losing words to...
letting people witness what things that should be impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm doing that with psychology. Sometimes I'm doing it with just trickery, or even optical illusions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all, you know, I never claimed that any of it's real magic. It's just looking at things through a different lens.
Mm-hmm.
And I make the audience look at my show through the lens of my choosing.
Yeah.
And through that lens, it looks like I'm doing magic.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've authored some books, and some of it is dealing with like self-hypnosis. Some of it is similar to the Seven Habits in terms of predicting your future and how you make your goals, how you accomplish your goals.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about the subject matter, some of the books that you've written?
Yeah, well, the main book, some of the books I've written are very niche, you know, written for magicians or written for other kind of things. But the main book is, the title is How to Predict the Future by Creating It Yourself. The subtitle is The User's Manual for Your Subconscious Mind. So basically, all of us go through... Most of us go through school and life, learning everything we need, English, science, math. No one ever teaches you how to use your subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned it from reading. You know, I was reading books on goal achievement and stumbled across Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, which is all about the subconscious mind. His book was the first big self-help book, in my opinion. And, you know, the movie The Secret is all based on Napoleon Hill's work. And so basically it's an instruction manual. That's what my book is how do you apply the most powerful part of your mind towards the achievement of your goals? Because most people don't know how to do that, and most people only apply their conscious mind toward their goals. And your conscious mind, while it's nice, is weak compared to your subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
Subconscious mind will always overpower the conscious. So if you consciously make a goal, but you don't subconsciously make a goal, you're not going to achieve the goal.
Mm-hmm.
So there are steps you can take to make sure that you go all in
right
towards whatever you desire.
And I think that's something that's key, again, working with kids, but it's also something that you can use throughout your life, because we all go through a variety of stages within our lives. And, you know, one thing that I think can be a hurdle, like you mentioned, the wall between our conscious and subconscious mind, but then we also are unfortunately taught quite often between the concrete, we see the concrete. We see our neighborhoods, we see our environments, we see people around us versus the abstract, which is, you know, our dreams and our goals and our ambitions. What would you suggest would be ways or exercises that we possibly could do so that we don't catch ourselves into this negative cycle of this is my reality versus kind of focusing on what the possibilities could be?
Yeah, well, if you start to think that this is my reality, that's because that's sinking into your subconscious mind. It's going to get stuck there because of that wall.
Mm-hmm.
There's only three ways to get through the wall, to get something from your conscious mind. So let's say you want to see yourself as having opportunities. That simple thought. I have many opportunities. There's three ways to get that into your, through the critical factor, which is the wall, from the conscious into the subconscious. One is through trauma, which we don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's why if someone gets in a car accident and then they'll become afraid of driving, because the critical factor goes down, all the fear goes into the subconscious mind, goes back up. Same thing if someone ever gets bitten by a spider and then they have a fear of spiders for the rest of their life. Because that the trauma, the scare, lowers the wall. That's also why a hypnotist will yell, sleep! Right? Because it startles you. It lowers that temporarily. It goes right to the subconscious and they'll just pass out.
Mm-hmm.
When it's done well, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way, but trauma is hard. It's too hard to do. So the other two ways are hypnosis or self-hypnosis, which requires knowledge of doing that. They can learn how to do that in my book.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can hire a hypnotist to do it. And the other way, which anybody can do, is repetition, affirmations. So telling yourself, I have unlimited opportunities, saying it over and over and over. It just takes longer than it does with trauma or hypnosis, but eventually repetition will get past the wall and get into your subconscious mind, and you will begin to believe that you do have unlimited opportunities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, if people would like to get more information, and I'll include it in the description of this podcast as well as your webpage. Is there any particular thought you want to leave us with today as we wrap this episode of our podcast?
Sure. Just realize that your mind and the minds that you're shaping are exponential. I mean, there's so much more influence that you can have than you even realize
right. On
these kids, especially while they're young in their subconscious mind. That critical, that wall is not as high as it is in an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So you can fill them up with hope and positivity and aspirations.
And one neat thing, I think, this opportunity, especially the after school and out of school time, is that you mentioned repetition. We actually have access to students.
Yeah.
For a certain period of time in the summer. So it's not, like generations ago where kids just went outside and played. Now there's programs and activities that are getting organized to start planting some of those seeds so that they can have a bright future. I think technology now is opening the doorways to a lot of things that in the past kids probably didn't know about, which can be a good thing and a bad thing.
We're
in this information age. But I think with us as professionals, it is important that we do make sure that we do steer students in a positive direction, plant the seeds of having positive thoughts, letting them know the importance of positive thoughts, and encourage a belief system within themselves.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, Chad, I appreciate you taking time today. I was really impressed with your presentation. Like I said, I can't describe it. I know it's something that we are going to be talking about for a long time. And I wish you continued success.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the Case for Kids podcast. Case for Kids is a division of Harris County Department of Education. Our podcast explores different topics concerning resources available for kids and their families, OST professionals, or anyone interested in issues related to out-of-school time.